Food and Drug Administration Administrator Dr. Margaret Hamburg is stepping down at the end of March after nearly 6 years on the job. Chief Scientist Dr. Stephen Ostroff will serve as interim commissioner until a full-time replacement is found. What sort of legacy is Hamburg leaving behind? Well, for some insight, we turn to Paul Howard. He's a health policy expert and senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Dr. Howard, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So let's start with the bottom line first. The FDA, is it stronger or worse off than 6 years ago?
I think it's definitely stronger than it was when she came on board. You've got an agency that I think has a much improved reputation, particularly among the life sciences industry. Approvals this year are at the largest, I think, over the last 15 or 20 years, I think 41 approvals this year. And a recent survey of life science companies found that the reputation of the agency for being predictable, not being a barrier to innovation, has certainly gone up. So while there's still challenges there, I think Dr. Hamburg certainly leaves the agency in a better position than when she found it.
Now, on the approval of drug side, I mean, she's been criticized by some as saying that she put the drug company's interests ahead of those of public health. Is that a fair charge?
I think it's an unfair charge. You have to realize the agency really has almost an unwinnable mandate, which is to approve drugs that are safe and effective. But, of course, the perspective on safe and effectiveness varies not only from indication to indication. That the patient's tolerance for risk with a disease like cancer or multiple sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease is going to be extraordinarily high, versus consumers who might have an expectation that when they take, a statin or an aspirin, that it's going to be virtually, foolproof. The reality is all medicines have risks and benefits, and there are always going to be complaints about that. But having said that, overall, I think the agency is moving in a better direction than it was when she got there.
And continuing on the drug side, does the increased pace of approvals of drugs, does that tend to drive the industry to maybe invest more in new drugs?
Well, this is a very interesting and it's a very good question, because where the agency tends to move quickly does spur investment. So you see for rare diseases, what the agency would say with diseases from unmet medical need or for small populations, the agency tends to be very proactive and very flexible. Again, cancer, very rare diseases, Lou Gehrig's disease, if they have a cure or a treatment, the agency will do its best to accelerate that. Where it gets much more cautious and arguably too cautious in diseases like or issues like antibiotics, for drug-resistant bacteria or heart disease or diabetes, where the agency is concerned those drugs are used in far larger populations and is much more cautious, although arguably the disease burden of those diseases is much higher.
And we also had a situation a couple of years back about compounding pharmacies, where there was that viral meningitis outbreak as a result of contaminated components. Those were really outside the FDA's jurisdiction. Do you think that was a learning experience, and did the FDA do what it could in a situation like that?
I think it really did what it could, and you're right. It was really outside the agency's jurisdiction at the time. This is an example of the agency's relationship with Congress. When something goes wrong, the agency is going to be held accountable, even if it wasn't really responsible for the underlying problem or it was a particularly complex problem that a simple rule isn't going to address. But that's the expectation, that the agency is going to be held to an extraordinarily high standard. If it makes any mistakes, it's going to be called to the carpet in a pretty unpleasant way by Congress.
And looking at it from the consumer standpoint, I know if you're one of those people like I am that gets certain prescription drugs in the mail, they send you almost an encyclopedia nowadays accompanying something you might have been taking for years, like, Lipitor. Is that a result of FDA action, this increased data and information going to consumers about drugs?
It is. It's also a reflection of the agency's cautiousness or risk averseness. So they're going to put everything on the label that might be a potential side effect. And companies are going to put everything on the label that might be a potential side effect just to try and deter liability lawsuits. But it doesn't make the label any more understandable by consumers who are trying to figure out what their real risks are. I think that's one place where the agency has been trying to get better but hasn't quite gotten its handle around it.
All right. We're speaking with Paul Howard. He's a health policy expert and senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Let's look at the food side of the FDA. What would you say were the big progress, some of Dr. Hamburg's accomplishments there, and maybe where did things fall short?
Well, the agency has been trying for quite some time to do things like, for instance, bring along a new label for food. And I think after 6 years after the first draft guidance was issued, the agency finally proposed a final food label. I don't think it's been finalized yet. So this is one of these areas where the agency is extraordinarily slow and cautious. You could argue it's a missed opportunity to try and update things more scientifically, give consumers better information. But again, it's one of those areas where the agency is going to be extremely cautious because there's a label out there now, and they don't want to mess with something that's perceived to be working, even if it isn't all that informative.
And what about some of the, how is the agency in responding to things that may or may not be giant public health issues, like the labeling of gluten-free, which somehow has become wildly popular, even though it only benefits about 0.5% of the population?
Right. I think the agency, generally, tries to follow, the science in these areas. So I think it's been relatively, good. There were also other very big scandals where culture touches on science or public policy. There's usually a big dust-up. For instance, there was Plan B under Margaret Hamburg's watch, a contraceptive pill that was, the agency found it to be safe, but HHS said, no, there needs to be further study of this product before it's released to the public, and waited an additional 2 years until after the 2012 election to release it. So places where there's that kind of hot-button quality to the agency's decision-making inevitably gets dragged into the realm of politics.
That was the morning-after pill and its sale to teenagers?
Yes.
Okay, and what about the other one, I guess, was the opioid prescription allowances, that drew some criticism for maybe the agency allowing too liberal allowance of doctors being able to prescribe those?
Well, that's an extraordinarily challenging area. So you've got, opiates that are obviously being abused by some portion of the population, although I think deaths, unless I checked, are going down in terms of abuse, but also are legitimately used by people with very serious chronic pain issues, and they're trying to strike a balance there between access and ensuring that the product is not abused. I think really there you've got a conflict between the Department of Justice, which has been extraordinarily aggressive in going after pharmacies and pharmacy benefit managers in terms of double-checking how those drugs are utilized and how they're prescribed by physicians even. And the agency, I think, has been more cautious. It's approved a couple of different versions of drug-resistant opioids to ensure that people can't, frankly, crush them and then snip them, which leads to abuse. But still, again, retain access for forms of the product that might be more efficacious than earlier versions. So I think the agency is really trying to, again, walk this tightrope between perceived problems.
And it's probably a reality that if there's an internecine turf war or some kind of a political battle between, say, justice and something the size of FDA, justice is going to probably prevail.
Well, justice has got an awful big hammer to use there. So they're going after physicians and pharmacies in Florida and other places, and states have responded as well. But I think that that's absolutely right. The FDA is trying to balance what it perceives as the needs of patients, and the Department of Justice is going after what it perceives to be a large abuse problem. And those are really kind of conflicting points of view, whose priorities are going to be put first.
And what about management of the day-to-day processes within the agency? They have people that were stationed around the world. That happened, I think, before Dr. Hamburg got there, but that had to be operationalized or regularized. And also some investments in information technology and their new campus and so forth. How well did she handle all of the administrative and bureaucratic processes in dealing with the career employees there?
We didn't even talk about that, but that's a huge problem. I think 80% of the active pharmaceutical ingredients are now imported from abroad. So we had a problem a couple of years ago with tainted heparin, which is a blood thinner imported from China. So in a world where a growing number of drugs, particularly generic drugs, are coming from India or China or other places that the FDA didn't have the opportunity or didn't have the manpower to go over there and inspect them on a regular basis compared to American companies, there's a perception, perhaps correctly, so that there was a greater risk of tainted products entering the market from abroad after the last user fee agreement, which the FDA negotiates with industry and the administration every 5 years. They got additional funding. They are spending more time abroad and inspecting a little more vigorously those generic drug companies. So I think they're doing a better job on global inspections, which is quickly needed, and trying to update their information technology systems. That is going to be an ongoing challenge for quite some time. I think the FDA is not quite where it needs to be in terms of utilizing information. They had a project called the Mini Sentinel System, which is trying to get up and running to track drug side effects across hundreds of millions of patient records. But you can see where these issues are kind of coming to a head. There's a committee in Congress right now called the 21st Century Cures Initiative, bipartisan in the House Energy and Commerce Committee, that's looking at ways to streamline innovation. With that sense, exactly, the FDA is not quite where it needs to be in terms of adopting cutting-edge technologies to advance innovation.
And if you were looking ahead and trying to predict, there is a gambit in Congress to rearrange and reorganize. This comes up from time to time. all of the food inspection apparatus of the government, which is divided between HHS and agriculture. The current bills would make agriculture, make HHS the winner. And so, how do you handicap that actually happening?
Well, it's a good question. These kind of reallocations of responsibilities are usually fraught with tension because whoever's giving them up doesn't want to give them up with whatever money and prestige comes with having that type of regulation. My concern is that you've got a rapidly moving scientific area where drugs and supplements and being able to understand, for instance, an individual's genetic susceptibility to disease might hinge on what kind of foods they consume or how those foods might be modified in ways to address disease. I think perhaps having, and this is a preliminary thought of mine, but perhaps keeping it at the Food and Drug Administration in a place where they do have touch with the latest science, or at least trying to keep in touch with the latest science on genomics and these other fields, is where you might want to have it be, as opposed to moving over to agriculture, which is more in the tradition of, checking for animal-based diseases, as opposed to looking at, nutraceuticals or other products like that that might be, in some respects, the future of medicine.
All right. Paul Howard is a health policy expert and senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Thanks so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.